Years and years ago, when I was part of Unity Christianity, which is almost 40 years ago, there was a practice really popular called doing affirmations. Have any of you guys done affirmation practice? Are you familiar with that? Kind of, yeah. It was the kind of thing, I don't want to discredit it, because at a certain time it might be the perfect practice to do, but it was the practice if you were having trouble making the rent, you'd say an affirmation, I have abundance, I have all the money I need, I am wealthy. Or if you were experiencing maybe ill health, you'd say, I am healthy, my body is bursting with healing energy. And the limitation for me of a affirmation practice was, if you activate one side of an affirmation, say, I have all the money I need to meet my bills, it also activates the unconscious mirror, which is, oh my gosh, the rent is due in 2 days and I don't have it. You know, and the idea is things that seem opposite, poverty and abundance, sickness and health, that seem opposite are actually two sides of the same coin, are they not? I mean, if it weren't for poverty, we wouldn't even have the concept of wealth in our minds. They can only exist because they're tied to the flip side of it. And in this practice feels more whole to me because we look at both sides of everything. So this morning we had a small group. We were talking about the classes and how to build a more consistent and vibrant practice. And what we were talking about this morning has to do with that affirmation, and opposites are actually the same thing, and one side naturally brings up the other side, is in looking at the parts of you that want to practice, that want to have a meditation practice, it's equally valuable to look at the sides of you that have no interest in practice and do not want to do it. Because if Vipassana is deeper, clearer seeing both the positive forces and the denying forces to anything, gives you a very complete picture of what it is to have a human mind, right? And think about that. It's not just meditation. Everything we do that takes a bit of effort will have a positive impulse and a negative impulse, correct? And when you only double down on one, that's a stressful way to be. But just seeing both as they come up is kind of freeing. So we ended up, and I just thought I would, it's a lead into what's here on the board, since we talked about it this morning, and maybe we don't talk about this enough. There's a classical teaching from the Buddhist sutras called the hindrances. And the language is a little bit archaic because it just is. But it's the stuff that takes us out of practice. And what in the sutras, they're always references in meditation. But those guys sat 10 hours a day, right? For us, because we sit maybe 1 hour a day, we could look at this as what takes us out of life. What takes us away from the moment? When we're checked out or we're dazed off, what is that? What moves us away from the moment? And so the classical list are the first five. And the first one is sense desire, which is classically considered to be the largest hindrance. And it's the want of the body for comfort and ease. And this can be anything from you're distracted and you're out of the moment because you're hungry. You had that happen? You're in a meeting or something and you can't really pay attention. You're not really there because your body needs food. I was talking about one that's happened to me many times in my life when I have to go to the bathroom. All the conversations and things I've missed because all I could think about was, I really need to go to the bathroom. I'll have that sense desire too. Wanting sleep. Sometimes, you know, have you ever been at a performance or something or a lecture where your head keeps jerking and you're sort of falling asleep? You know, the body has a constant need. Right? There are needs that come up all the time. And sense desire is a constant force. The second one is ill will. And that's the, if we look at the sense desires of what we want or cling towards, you could look at ill will as the things that we have adverse reactions to. And this can be anything from, well, you're mad about something, you're irritated with somebody, you're in conflict about something, and it takes you away because it's uncomfortable, right? Ill will is really uncomfortable. I think one of the suckiest experiences in life is having resentment, for example, or envy. It's so painful. So, and it definitely takes you out of the moment. The next two, low energy, which is called sloth and torpor, and restlessness, they're two sides of the too high energy and too low energy. And it's dealing with the body needs to have a certain kind of energy for us to be present. And the low energy, frankly, these days, I'd call it exhaustion. Many of us are so committed. We have so many things going on. We might be caring for family, a job, other things that we just feel tired. So, or the other times this low energy is associated with depression. You know, it's just something where you feel like the energy drain has been pulled out of your pan and everything's sort of drained out. Right, those experiences. And it's seeming opposite, but the other side of that coin is restlessness, and which is a one that I experience a lot. And restlessness, usually underneath it, has some kind of undigested emotional quality, like anxiety, worry. The other thing is it can be remorse, which is why we work on sila, skillful living. If something's out of balance in your life or something isn't been attended to, it'll make you restless. And the last one on the traditional one is self-doubt, which is just, oh my God, I'm terrible at this. Why am I doing this? This is not going to work for me. I'm a bad meditator. I should just go, you know, you can take that sentence a million directions. And the last one, which I think is prevalent in this society, is basically life. We tend to be overcommitted. And so sometimes we are just enough out of balance with the demands on our time that there's simply not enough time. Meditation takes time to do a practice. So it's also looking at the balance of our life. So, the point in all this in sitting is usually we'll usually have a top one or two hits on our list. We don't experience all of these equally. Part of it depends on where our body is, what life has been like the last few weeks or whatever. And some of it's our habitual places that we live, our habitual reactive patterns. So it's useful to see this because if Vipassana is deeper, clearer seeing, seeing the stuff in the back of our unconscious closet, which manifests as these, is really helpful to look at. Not to change or fix, but to understand. Understand why we are the way we are, why we have an ideal of who we think we should be, and then there's the actual us. And seeing the gap between those two. And the gap, you'll see this stuff. So I would invite you when you, not only in practice, but just in life, when you notice you're checked out, you're zoned out, you don't want to be there, whatever, to think to yourself, what's going on here? Which of these factors is in play? And it's helpful to look at that. And you'll find there's one or two that'll be predominant for you. And just knowing which ones tend to be your most frequent visitors has a lot of value. It has a lot of value. So I think there's a lot of value in just seeing them. And the idea of Vipassana is just seeing things changes your relationship to them. Now, in the sutras, there's also lists of advice of what to do to, you know, when these come up, how to work with them skillfully. And the top layer of practice is when you see them and they self-liberate. You're there, you see one of these come up, and just the, when you see it, you're aware of it, that it just can release and go back into emptiness. When you're pretty steady in practice and presence, that level can be pretty active. But most of the time we're not there. So another level underneath it is just to see it as an object that has arisen, right? And just, that's your primary object in your practice right then. You're looking at ill will. you're looking at something and you're seeing it deeply. You're seeing how it makes the mind move. You know, maybe you're starting to rehearse, justify, argue, things happen inside. You're seeing the way it makes the heart close. So you're really present with what ill will is feeling like right then. So that's another layer of practice. And if that doesn't even work and it just takes you out, you're just pissed off, you're not going to sit, then the sutras talk about a third level, which is dealing with it in your life so that it doesn't get in the way so much. And there's these lists in the sutras that are interesting, like for sense desire, the force you put against it, for example, is you guard the sense doors. You eat moderately. Guarding the sense doors is as you watch what you're reading, what you're looking at on TV, what you're reading on Facebook, and just making sure they're keeping your senses in balance. The traditional remedy against ill will is, big surprise, metta practice, thinking about gratitude, so doing those to balance out the tendency of the heart to close when it's feeling angry. With low energy and restlessness, with low energy, sometimes, especially if you've been sitting a long time, it's to get up and walk around. Do a few jumping jacks. Or get some sleep. Maybe you need to get to bed earlier. You know, take care of your body to make sure you've got energy. For restlessness, it's about looking at your life. What's going on in life? Are there things I need to attend to I'm not attending to, so I'm worried, I'm anxious? Are there things that I'm doing that are causing myself remorse? And so when I sit on the cushion and space opens up, that's what comes up. And then the last one, self-doubt, is the traditional remedy is to deeper understanding of the Dharma, to really see the whole picture. So when self-doubt comes up, you can go, this is part of the map. This is not, there's nothing wrong with me. Self-doubt is simply part of the process. And in all of those, the remedies are noble friends, a noble conversation. So just being able to talk about it, find support, both to realize that there's nothing wrong with you. This is human, this is being a human being. And also to have people encourage you and just say, yeah, I've got the same thing. It's fine. You're okay. You know, you are all right. So I just wanted to encourage you to, instead of when something comes up that takes you out of practice, instead of fighting it, take an interest in it. Look at it. There might be insight that comes from just all the flotsam and jetsam that seems like it's in the way.